Harry could see Percy and the rest of the ministry delegation waiting for him, casting nervous glances at the sobbing Hagrid and Grawp, who were still in their seats. Ron and Hermione were hurrying toward Harry, passing Scrimgeour going in the opposite direction. Harry turned and walked slowly on, waiting for them to catch up, which they finally did in the shade of a beech tree, under which they had sat in happier times. "What did Scrimgeour want?" Hermione whispered. "Same as he wanted at Christmas," shrugged Harry. "Wanted me to give him inside information on Dumbledore and be the ministry's new poster boy." Ron seemed to struggle with himself for a moment, then he said loudly to Hermione, "Look, let me go back and hit Percy." "No," she said firmly, grabbing his arm. "It'll make me feel better." Harry laughed. Even Hermione grinned a little, though her smile faded as she looked up at the castle. "I can't bear the idea that we might never come back," she said softly. "How can Hogwarts close?" "Maybe it won't," said Ron. "We're not in any more danger here than we are at home, are we? Everywhere's the same now. I'd even say Hogwarts is safer. There are more wizards inside to defend the place. What do you reckon, Harry?"
"I'm not coming back, even if it does reopen," said Harry. Ron gaped at him, but Hermione said sadly,
"I knew you were going to say that. But then, what will you do?"
"I'm going back to the Dursleys once more because Dumbledore wanted me to," said Harry. "But it'll be a short visit and then I'll be gone for good."
"But where will you go if you don't come back to school?"
"I thought I might go back to Godric's Hollow," Harry muttered. He had had the idea in his head ever since the night of Dumbledore's death.
"For me, it started there, all of it. I've just got a feeling I need to go there. And I can visit my parents' graves. I'd like that."
"And then what?" said Ron.
"Then I've got to track down the rest of the Horcruxes, haven't I?" said Harry, his eyes upon Dumbledore's white tomb, reflected in the water on the other side of the lake. "That's what he wanted me to do. That's why he told me all about them. If Dumbledore was right, and I'm sure he was, there are still four of them out there. I've got to find them and destroy them. And then I've got to go after the seventh bit of Voldemort's soul, the bit that's still in his body. And I'm the one who's going to kill him. And if I meet Severus Snape along the way," he added, "so much the better for me, so much the worse for him." There was a long silence. The crowd had almost dispersed now, the stragglers giving the monumental figure of Grawp a wide berth as he cuddled Hagrid, whose howls of grief were still echoing across the water.
"We'll be there, Harry," said Ron.
"What?"
"At your aunt and uncle's house," said Ron.
"And then we'll go with you, wherever you're going."
"No,"
said Harry quickly. He had not counted on this. He had meant them to understand that he was undertaking this most dangerous journey alone.
"You said to us once before," said Hermione quietly, "that there was time to turn back if we wanted to. We've had time, haven't we?"
"We're with you, whatever happens," said Ron. "But mate, you're going to have to come round my mum and dad's house before we do anything else, even Godric's Hollow."
"Why?"
"Bill and Fleur's wedding, remember?"
Harry looked at him, startled. The idea that anything as normal as a wedding could still exist seemed incredible, and yet wonderful.
"Yeah,
we shouldn't miss that," he said finally. His hand closed automatically around the fake Horcrux, but in spite of everything, in spite of the dark and twisting path he saw stretching ahead for himself, in spite of the final meeting with Voldemort he knew must come, whether in a month, in a year, or in 10, he felt his heart lift at the thought that there was still one last golden day of peace left to enjoy with Ron and Hermione.
Hello, this is Jim Dale. I hope you have enjoyed this unabridged listening library production of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince by J.K. Rowling.
As you know, audiobooks are great entertainment and a wonderful way to enjoy a good book when your hands are busy. But have you ever considered audiobooks as being good for you? Most of us know from first-hand experience just how beneficial it is to read aloud to the children in our lives. Listening to stories helps children build vocabulary, improve their reading skills, and succeed more readily in school. Being read to is an important step on the road to becoming a good reader, and one of the best ways to ensure a lifelong love of literature and reading. But few of us have all the time we would like to read to the children in our lives. That's where audiobooks can help. Instead of letting a child turn on the television or pop in a video game, try pressing play and engaging them in a good book. Listening to an audiobook has the same educational value as it would if someone were doing the reading in person, and they are great entertainment for trips in the car or at home when no one is available to read to them. A wide range of books guaranteed to appeal to children of all ages, including most childhood classics, are available on cassette and CD at bookstores and libraries across the country. So the next time you're considering what to listen to, why not consider picking up something for the children in your life? This program was directed by David Rapkin and produced by David Rapkin and Orly Moskowitz. Production Associate, Lewis Milgrom. Text copyright, 2005 by J.K. Rowling. Production copyright, 2005, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.